I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
It's Pick Six with Mully and Haw, where we debate the top six sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Haw. Pick Six with Mully and Haw starts now.
Did the Bears lose two games last weekend in Washington with the chaos and inner turmoil created by the Fail Mary? Would they have played better or won in Arizona if not, or the first loss?
If not for the first loss, they might have played better. They might have. I don't know that you can flat out say, I mean, the idea that if Montez Sweat was healthy, I think is an easier question to answer. They'd definitely play better. But I think that when you look at that game, had they won, let's just say for the sake of argument that nothing went awry, they actually came back and in the last 30 seconds of the game took the lead and then won that game and closed it out the way you're supposed to, I think that they would have been soaring with confidence. They'd have been on a four-game winning streak. And even with some of these injuries, they might have been able to get it done in the desert. There's no doubt that everything that went on in Washington damaged them this week and impacted their preparation for the game. Whether anyone wants to concede that or not, you just heard different things come out. There was a lot of chaos, turmoil. There was a lot of things going on. But that was such a profound loss, and they were beaten in so many different ways. I think it really, it might have been an attrition of schedule loss because of all the injuries, because you went into it with serious problems on the offensive line. I'm not sure that they resolved that in the correct fashion with Larry Borum brought back to life and then out on the field. I think you might have been better off if you had moved Pryor outside. I get it. I understand the two-for-one thing. You don't want to move two guys to fill one position. But look, that was their worst game, and it didn't help that it came following the horrible finish and the bad week. So I think it's an interesting question, but I would say that Montez Sweat not being available was as important as anything that happened the week before.
There was definitely a Commanders hangover, but I will raise my hand first, and we all should have known better. That offensive line is just not going to get it done. You guys did a great job last night on the postgame show, and you run through that line, and there's nobody that started yet. Two of the five starters yesterday were expected to start. And the other guys were like backup swing tackles. Your backup swing tackle started at left tackle, and he hadn't taken a snap all year. Yeah. I should have known better. I should have never picked the Bears. We all said that this was the hardest game for us to pick so far this year. And then that was before Montez Sweat was ruled out, which right. caught a lot of us off guard. We were all at the pregame show like, what? Wait, what?
Yeah.
Mark Rohde told us, broke
kinda,
that to us.
It kind of stopped the show for a second.
Yeah. Everybody had to like
processing.
Gather their thoughts. Great point. So definitely a Commander's hangover, but I don't know if they could have played better, but boy, did they play bad.
It's all related because when you lose a game like they did in Washington and you have something happen like you lose – Montez Sweat at the 11th hour because of an injury, how do you handle that? How equipped are you to handle a sudden change like that? Where do you find the resolve to have the next man up, to get by that adversity? What happened in Washington affected what happened yesterday, because whether or not we, you know, overstate it or don't believe in it, or however you feel about belief or confidence or camaraderie, these kind of intangible things, chemistry, if you will, leadership, they matter in the NFL. There's a category for that. And the Bears right now are among the worst in the league. And so they don't believe, it's clear they don't believe in each other and they don't believe in the coaching staff. And so, or there's something missing. And last week revealed just how deep of a problem they have when you have leaders speaking up publicly against the questioning the authority and the decision-making of people in charge. And then you have your best defensive player an hour and a half before kickoff ruled out of the game. You don't rally around that if you're a team that doesn't know how anymore, that spent the week talking about how bad things are. Last week revealed the dysfunction in the Bears, and that was exposed by the Washington loss. Yesterday was just a reminder of just how frazzled things have become and how badly the Bears have unraveled. So, yeah, I do think one led to the other. That's what they were afraid of. They spoke it into existence, and we watched it happen.
These are the questions I cannot answer, right?
That is the voice of Olin Krutz. He's with you guys at 7 a.m. Which defender did the Bears miss the most? Montez Sweat, Kyler Gordon, Jaquan Brisker. How surprising was the defense's collapse, especially giving up 213 yards on the ground? Remember when Tyreek Stevenson's discipline was the biggest issue on the Bears' defense?
That gets overlooked now because he did play and he had a breakup. So I guess all is forgiven, if not forgotten. I wouldn't forget it because I don't know that if he's a guy that has revealed himself as a player you can count on either. All these things are related. They miss Montez Sweat the most. In the run defense, it's overlooked what effect he has in making everybody better. We talk about him as a multiplier. That's not just on pass rushing situations. That's on every down because of the attention you have to pay him. He makes a lot of plays, whether he makes tackles or not, but he makes a lot of plays in that run defense. And then Andrew Billings goes down, and you're just not in a position to stop the run. James Conner ran hard against the Bears. He always does. Yes. But the overall way that the Cardinals' offensive line controlled the Bears' defensive line was not something I expected. Even with or without Montez Sweat, that offensive line, give them credit. It's not all about Kyler Murray. I thought he would be the most impactful player of the game, but it turned out they just ran the ball down they ran it down the Bears' throats, and the Bears had no answers for that. And the 53-yarder, yeah, that hurt. That was a backbreaker, but throughout the day, it was steady and it was consistent and it was just overwhelming for the Bears.
Well, I mean, listen, Montez Sweat is one of two fives, blues, that the Bears have on defense. One of two guys that any other team in the league would want to have on their team. I believe that I'm going to take Jalen Johnson is your other one. But I'm going to stick with Brisker. I've been saying this for a couple of weeks. And as this keeps getting longer and longer and longer, if they're going in this direction, is he even going to want to come back this year? You know, that's going to become a personal choice. But you know who wasn't there? He was there in spirit. He had an awful game yesterday. Tremaine Edmonds.
Yeah.
Boy, was he bad. He couldn't get off a lineman.
We were talking about that.
To save his life. He was gobbled up all afternoon long. And then when he did kind of was free, I was wondering if he wanted to make contact. You're the middle linebacker.
Wow.
Hit somebody.
Well, the Bears did not strike you as a physical defense yesterday.
Not at all, David. Great point.
I think that they did not appear to be a physical defense. Listen, Montez Sweat is obviously the guy they missed the most because they all but won without Gordon and Brisker. And they seem to have been able to get past that. But that was a bridge too far. Maybe the fact that, and they were technically without four starters when the game opened because they had their little Tyreek Stevenson discipline issue, which it was very interesting. The report from Jake Lazor that Stevenson left practice on Wednesday when he found out he was demoted and wasn't going to start the game. And then he ended up going back into practice and he ended up playing the rest of the week. But he didn't handle that necessarily very well, and it was very interesting to learn that the fact that he came back into practice and all the rest of that. I felt that they made a bigger deal out of that out of his initial reaction than they really needed to, because it wasn't like he walked out or left the facility,
right? I tend to agree with that.
He went and he pouted and he came back and that was it. So I think that you're without four starters on your defense. I honestly, Montez Sweat is the best player on the football team. Maybe it's close with Jalen Johnson, but I think it's Sweat, and I think he is the multiplier, and I think they've been a different team since they made that trade. So when he couldn't go, you didn't feel good about their chances, and it was the accurate response.
It's a good question.
All right. Did you feel the Bears needed to get QB Caleb Williams out of their 20-point loss to Arizona? Was it coaching malpractice that he wasn't pulled from that obviously losing proposition in the fourth quarter?
I would call it kind of unforgivable. I think that of all the things that happened, of all the things that, you didn't like about the game, of all the failed preparation, of all the problems they had in their run defense and their fits, whatever way you want to look at it, that was the most egregious of the coaching mistakes. And that's a mistake. To leave the guy on the field until, an extra five players get a shot at him was insane. They were taking people out. You're down 20 points. What are you doing? Why? What exactly are you attempting to do? I mean, you want to goad the guy into Anthony Richardson his way out of a game? Is that it? He needs to tap out. He's never going to do that. And I think that it was really dumb, honestly, especially because you had no choice but to throw the football. You're 20 points down, and they're just teeing off on your best player, your future generational quarterback. What are you doing? What in the name of God are you doing? If that kid had gotten hurt, and I know he limped off a little bit, he said he was fine, I think that is grounds for dismissal.
I was calling for it, I believe, at about the 4:30 mark. He couldn't be protected. He wasn't protecting himself. And yeah. I get it. Like, it's not over till it's over. It was over.
Yeah.
So if you want to keep him in there, as it was explained by the head coach, and we can listen to it later on, because they wanted him to learn. They wanted him to have the experience. They wanted him in the two-minute drill. Okay? Hand the ball off. Ask the guys to fire off the ball and hand the ball off. That's what they should have been doing at that point. If you're leaving him in, everybody knows there was nobody in the backfield. On top of it, it was empty sets they were putting him in. It's just dumb. Malpractice is a good word. Hopefully he's okay. He said he was okay after the game. But how he wakes up feeling this morning, there might not have been enough Advil on that plane ride home to make him feel good.
With 4:35 left in the game, the Cardinals inserted Clayton Toon to replace Kyler Murray. At that point, that was a concession. The game was over. It was 29-9. It was the way it finished. And at that point in time, you should have gone to Tyson Bagent and said, "Warm up, young man. You're going to finish out for Caleb Williams." Look, there have been the last two games a series of bad decisions. No resistance on the defense from the defense before the Hail Mary. Then before that, not vetoing the handoff to Doug Kramer against the Commanders. Yesterday, not blitzing on a rundown Flusie took responsibility for. How to discipline Tyreek Stevenson, slap on the wrist instead of actually making a statement that would have resonated. Those were all bad decisions. But the worst one, the one that would fall under the category of fireable offense, came when Caleb Williams went back onto the field with 2 minutes to go in a game that was already lost, and they called passing plays, and they put him behind that shoddy offensive line and said, "Make a play." If he had been hurt, if he is injured, that qualifies as a fireable offense. There is no way you could consciously put your franchise quarterback, the future of your organization, in that situation and say it made sense. It made no sense. That's what you need to take responsibility for today, Matt Eberflus. Another bad decision in a week full of terrible examples.
For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
I don't know. That's a tricky question.
That's the voice of DJ Moore. We'll get with him at 8 this morning. What's more likely to happen this season if the Bears indeed have started trending in the wrong direction? Personnel changes with the depth chart, an offensive coaching staff change, a defensive coaching staff change, or a head coaching change?
Well, the Bears don't fire coaches in season. Now, maybe they'll change that. I doubt they buck tradition. You've got other options. You got to discuss them all. You're Ryan Poles, you've got to, on the flight home or a sleepless night or the first thing this morning, what are you going to do? How are you going to respond? Do you, A, take away defensive play calling duties from Matt Eberflus to give them to Eric Washington so you can be a head coach and not make dumb decisions because you've made two games full of dumb decisions? B, take Shane Waldron away from the play calling responsibility, the play sheet away from him. Give it to whoever, Thomas Brown, Simo, whoever, Kerry Joseph. I don't think that Shane Waldron has earned the right to call another game until proven differently. I think you could do that. Personnel changes, I don't know what you do. There's not really anybody clamoring to get on the field. You're banged up. You're injured. You need to put together an offensive line that is respectable. I don't know how you're going to do that. So there are a lot of things you could discuss. I don't know, though, that anybody needs to get benched. I don't know where Tyrique Stevenson stands. I mean, that was a slap on the wrist. I don't know how that factors into this conversation. But you have to have some real hard conversations about what to do next to save this season.
I would say, and the key part of this question is more likely to happen. This is not what I think is. This is what I think the Bears might do. Okay, I think they might make a change on the offensive side of the ball with the coaching staff. David just laid out some different people, but you can't like demote Shane Waldron. You either keep Shane Waldron and he does what he does, or you fire Shane Waldron like the Raiders did with Luke Getsy. I don't think Shane Waldron all of a sudden becomes the quarterback's coach and Joseph all of a sudden is the play caller. The play caller cannot be the guy from the Panthers, the passing game coordinator, right? He can't be that guy. We're not happy with the running game, so it can't be that guy as the OC. Who does Caleb Williams want calling the offense? I think that's the answer to the question.
I think there's a lot of answers to the question. And I think that one of the real issues here is that pretty much every move you make is going to be part of another move coming down the line. In other words, let's say you decide that Matt Eberflus needs to be a better head coach. So you give Eric Washington play-calling duties on defense. And I'm not saying that's a bad idea, but I am saying if you do that, then you're going to fire him as the head coach at the end of the year. Because the only reason he was retained as the head coach is the job he did as a defensive coordinator down the stretch after they got rid of a couple of coaches for whatever reason. Still unnamed, but we all have a pretty good idea, HR stuff. But the very fact that he took over in that role is how he kept his job. So if he gives up that role, then he's pretty much not needed around here because his best skill is as a defensive coordinator. It's a dilemma. But someone needs to be in charge. And Shane Waldron's not the answer. He really isn't the answer. So I think that they're probably going to have to stay the course. I don't think they're going to do anything drastic because the coach understands that's the first step out the door, giving up his defensive coaching ability, giving up his play calling, elite play calling. Didn't we decide that earlier in the year? So I don't think they're going to make a head coaching change. I think they're going to have a really bad year and they're going to fire everyone at the end of it.
Wow.
I'm not talking necessarily about a pick six or something like that.
We need to go back.
That was an oh, by the way.
We need to go back to that.
Oh, by the way, they're gonna. Wow.
What's your reaction to Cody Bellinger deciding to opt back in and stay with the Cubs for $27.5 million? What effect does that have on how active they, the Cubs, will be with trades or free agency? And where does Bellinger fit in on this Cubs team?
Yeah, here's the problem. This is exactly what the problem is. The problem is that he doesn't. You know, you really don't need him. You don't need to pay him that amount of money to play first base. You don't need to pay him that amount of money to be a DH. So what do? You make him a right fielder? Then what do? Seiya becomes a DH until you can trade him? That's probably the answer, frankly. But I think this doesn't fit what their offseason hopes were. I honestly believe that the Cubs might have been happier if Cody Bellinger had opted out than opted in. And I think that the reality is now you're going to have to make a trade. Now, if you want change, if you want something different, you're going to have to make a change. I think Pete Crow Armstrong is the center fielder, and I think he's pretty good as a center fielder. So that means Cody Bellinger has to find a position. It's probably right field if you can trade, say, a Suzuki. And I think you should try. Are they going to have to trade Nico now because they got too many guys? I don't know. You know, if they move Bellinger to first base, do you move the first baseman to second base? Do you trade? This is not the ideal situation for the Cubs. And it's not. I'm not taking shots at Bellinger. They gave him the contract and he opted in. And it was his choice. But I would imagine secretly, they would have preferred if he opted out. Honestly.
You're probably right about secretly they would have preferred, but maybe not. I'm trying to be glass half full here. I was shocked by the news. It kind of caught me off guard. I knew that a decision one way or the other needed to be made 5 days after the World Series, but I was trying to enjoy a football weekend. I kind of had baseball put on the back burner for a moment. But if he is okay with being the right fielder all year long, it's a pretty elite defensive outfield. Okay, it's pretty elite. The problem with his $27.5 million, that's too much money for his power at first base for the Cubs. Doesn't deliver enough. Not enough bang for your buck, if you will. So what I think could happen, because there's no flexibility, is they trade Nico Horner. Unfortunately, they move Michael Bush from first base to second base. And then you hope that somehow everybody spends all their money in New York and Pete Alonso's available. And then you bring in a Pete Alonso on a kind of Bellinger type deal, like with player options. So like we'll give you 30 and then it's 32 your option. And then it's 32 your option, something like that. And you see what happens. Then I could be satisfied as a Cubs fan.
I think Cubs fans should be satisfied with this. I totally think it's good news. You need Cody Bellinger to give you options and flexibility at a price that is affordable under today's MLB standards. And he had a somewhat of a down year based on what he accomplished in 2023. Wasn't fully healthy. We can make all the excuses and all the explanations. They're all valid. But I think that Cody Bellinger gives you a Gold Glove caliber outfielder or a plus defensive first baseman, or it gives you an ability to DH other people. He is a very good player. Is he a star? Is he the MVP that he was in LA? Not really, but I guess he's capable of that. He's 29. So him deciding to come back removes one question, and it gives you flexibility to look at Pete Alonso, to be creative in the trade market. It's always better to have a roster where you are full of, where you don't have question marks. And I think that he removes a question mark to this offseason. So it's not only money, but really it's only money. And if you're the Cubs, you are now in a better position to be aggressive in the offseason and to be able to bring a team into spring training that has fewer holes. And to me, that's progress.
You know, to answer your question,
how surprised were you that the Bulls assigned rookie first-rounder Matas Buzelis to the Windy City Bulls in the G League? Did we make too much of his early burst of athleticism?
We might have, but that's fun about the preseason. We can exaggerate. Oh, look at him guarding Giannis. He wants it. I think this is just not a huge surprise. I can't wait till he guards Bronny. whenever they play the Lakers G League team. That'll be fun.
Bronny sent down too.
And Bezelis, it doesn't mean he has to be there forever, but if he's getting minutes, if he's getting experience, it's probably good. And then maybe he can work his way back in the rotation. The Bulls might be a little bit better than maybe they expected to be early on. I don't have a big problem with this. I know in a season full of development, people could make the argument he should be on the court. But I don't think that everybody's on board with this, let's tank for Cooper Flagg. I think that there's a lot of people still want to win, and this is a move in that direction.
Not surprised at all. The G League is just getting going. Friday is the first G League game. Bulls are on the road for the first handful of games. Third week in November, they finally come home for a game out there. But, yeah, I mean, the kid needs to play. He doesn't need to sit there and watch. He needs to play. And I'm not surprised by this at all. The only thing that delayed this was the fact that the G League wasn't up and running yet. So he may as well have been hanging around with the, you know, big league NBA team instead of sitting around doing absolutely nothing. And as I'm going through the schedule frantically here, I do not see the Windy City Bulls actually playing the LA team. Not seeing that. So I don't know that we're going to get that matchup. Maybe they don't travel that far in G League.
Well, I think he'll be back up. I think that Bezelis will be back up before the year is over and maybe, you know, after the trade deadline. I don't know. But I think that you're absolutely right. I think the idea, and they knew it, is that, and he said he was fine with doing this. He wants to be able to play professional basketball. He's not there yet. He's 20 years old. He just turned 20, like, October 13th. So, you know, drafted as a 19-year-old. He turns 20, and he's going to the G League. That's for his development. That's to make him a better player and to work on his confidence. And he gets, just get him playing time. And he's not going to find tons of minutes available to him in the NBA. But he will be back. And I think he probably will be back sooner than Bronny. Bronny's going down, too. I think he needs to learn how to play. I think it's not just getting minutes. I think he just needs to figure out how to play the game of basketball. So a little bit different. I don't think they're going to face each other very often in the G League, if they do at all. And I think that Matas Bezelis will be back well before Bronny. Maybe I'm wrong, but that's just the way I look at it. I think he's a legitimate NBA player. He just needs more time. He's a young lad.
That's good.
I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.